Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
22nd of May. And we are on page 570. Parshas Tzav. Starting at the paragraph, Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemar, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Ze Karban Aharon Uvanova Sheyakrivu LaHashem, this is the Karban of Aaron and his sons that they will bring to Hashem, Biyom Himashach, so on the day that he is anointed. Asiris Ha'efa Soles Minchot Tamid, a tenth of an Efa of fine flour as a mincha, as an offering, Tamid, constantly. Now here the word Tamid means every day. Doesn't mean all the time, it means every day. Machatzisa ba'boker u'machatzisa ba'arev. Half of it is brought in the morning, half of it is brought in the evening. The Kohen Gadol, Aaron and his sons who become anointed, that means the Kohen Gadol, has to bring a karban mincha every single day. Half of it is brought in the morning, and half of it is brought in the afternoon. So it is a karban mincha. So far, there's nothing unusual about that. However, Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, al machavas, in a pan, a frying pan, bashemen te'aseh, it shall be made with oil, which would mean fried in oil. However, morbeches tiviena, it should be brought morbeches. Morbeches, which is a funny word, but it means that it should be boiled. It should be boiled well in water prior to it being fried in oil. So first you boil the dough, and after you boil it, then you fry it in oil. Actually, I guess it turns into dough when you put it in the water. But it's boiled first and then fried.
Is it like a bagel?
So a bagel is boiled and then baked. This is not baked.
It's more like a donut.
I guess so. But it's boiled first. Then, but it's not going to get eaten. It's going to get burned. Then, tufine minchas pitim. Then it is broken into pieces. Takriv reach nicholach laHashem. It should be brought as a what have they translated as a satisfying aroma to Hashem. Now, broken into pieces does not mean to grind it down into matzah meal. It means you just break it into four pieces. It's one. I guess thing, loaf, whatever it is. You break it in half, and then break the two halves into quarters, and then that's the way it's burned.
Can I ask a question before we go on? Why would it say that this is going to happen on the day of the Aaron inauguration and then Tamid?
Yeah, it's because he starts on the day he's inaugurated, and then it keeps going every day after that.
But I see. Okay, all right. I thought it was just on the day that he is inaugurated, but it's beginning on the day that he's inaugurated.
Even while they traveled, they were doing these things?
Yeah.
Okay.
Via Kohen. I'm even assuming the Mishkan was put up. V'ha-kohen ha-mashiach tachtav mi-banav, and the Kohen is anointed in his place from his children, ya'aseh usa, will do this. Chok olam, it is a statute forever, la-Hashem, for Hashem, kalil taktar, totally burned. Completely burned. And one more line, v'chol minchas kohen, and all Minachos of a Kohen, any mincha a Kohen brings, kalil tia, shall be completely burned, lo se achel, it shall not be eaten. Now, we seem to have learned one thing in this paragraph, but there are actually three different karbanos that are being discussed in this paragraph. The obvious one that's being discussed is the fact that the Kohen Gadol, every day, starting from the time he becomes Kohen Gadol, has to bring a mincha daily. One, half of it in the morning, half of it in the afternoon. This is a daily offering of the Kohen Gadol. The last line of the paragraph tells us, any time a Kohen brings a Karban Mincha, it is totally burned. Whereas when a Yisrael, or a Levi, a non-Kohen, brings a Karban Mincha, we already learned before that what happens at a Kohen Mincha, that a Karban Mincha is that the Kohen takes out a Kmitza, a handful, that Kmitza is burned, and the rest of it gets eaten by the Kohen. When a Kohen brings a mincha, the entire mincha is burned. So when a non-kohen brings a mincha, only a portion is burned and the rest is eaten by the kohen. When a kohen brings a mincha, it is completely burned. So that's a second point. That has nothing to do specifically with what the Kohen Gadol's carbon, even though the Kohen Gadol's carbon was also burned. But the point that is being made is anytime a Kohen decides to bring a carbon mincha, then it is completely burned. But there's another point in this paragraph which is not explicit, which really is brought into focus based on what Dr. Farhi said before, which is that we actually learn from the Pasuk Yud Gimel, from verse 13, this is the carbon of Aaron and his sons that they will bring to Hashem on the day they are anointed. We learn from here that even a Kohen Hedyot, a regular Kohen, brings the same carbon as the Kohen Gadol on the day that he assumes his position as Kohen. Meaning, a Kohen is born a Kohen, so he doesn't become a Kohen. But there are age limits and requirements before a Kohen can actually start to work in the Beis HaMikdash. The day that a Kohen, any Kohen, begins his work in the Beis HaMikdash, the first time that he does work in the Beis HaMikdash, he brings this same carbon as the Kohen Gadol. It is an Asiri Sa'efa, tenth of an Efa, half of it in the morning, half of it in the afternoon. And that is what is done for any Kohen on the day that they assume their rightful position as Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. So we learn three things. Number one, we learn the Kohen Gadol brings a carbon mincha, which is half in the morning, half in the afternoon, every day. A regular Kohen does the same thing on the day that he begins to work, and that's it. And anytime a Kohen decides to bring a mincha for whatever reason, it's completely burned. It's not, there's no kmitza taken off of it, it is completely burned. So here we have an interesting dichotomy between a mincha brought by a non-Kohen and a mincha brought by a Kohen. Other karbanos, we do not find this distinction. A shlamim that a Kohen brings is the same as a shlamim that a non-Kohen brings. An ola that a Kohen brings is the same as an ola as a non-Kohen brings. Other karbanos, they are the same. A chatas, they're all the same. But a karban mincha, this meal or flour offering, is different when a Kohen brings it and when a non-Kohen brings it. When a Kohen brings it, it is completely burned. When a non-Kohen brings it, the kmitza, the handful, is removed and burned, whereas the rest of it is eaten by the Kohanim. Now, yeah?
When Yisrael brings a Korban Mincha and the Kohen takes off a handful, what stage of the carbon is the handful? Is it the flour?
We learned before that it depends on the type of carbon that's being brought. If it is a carbon that is brought soles, flour, then it's taken off as flour. But many menachos can be brought in their already baked form or fried form. So then they are ground up so that you can take a kmitza. All right. Now, the... So, the first point to think about is that why would it be that any Kohen, when they begin their job as Kohen, when they enter the Beis HaMikdash and work for the first time, they offer the same carbon that the Kohen Gadol offers every day, which is a carbon mincha, partially in the morning, partially afternoon. What's the purpose of that? And why would it be broken in half, partially brought in the morning, partially brought in the afternoon? If he's expected to bring a carbon, the Kohen Gadol, every day, then bring a carbon. Why is it broken up partially in the morning, partially in the afternoon? And finally, why does the Kohen Gadol, why does he need to bring a carbon every single day? Well, what's the purpose of that? Now, the carbon mincha we learned before is when you rank the carbon mincha compared to a carbon that is brought as a bird or a carbon brought with an animal. How would you rank the carbon mincha, the flour offering? Where does it fit in regard to the other carbonos? What would you say about that?
Lowest.
It's least expensive.
It's least expensive. It's least expensive. The Karban Mincha is the least expensive of all the Karbanos. Now, you don't always get a choice. A person does a certain type of Aveira, they have to bring an animal. They have to bring a Karban Chata, so Karban Asham. But the voluntary Karbanos, we learned before that you do have some tiered Karbanos, so you have a choice, but the depending on financial ability, but a Karban that is a voluntary Karban, a Shlamim, an Ola, person could volunteer and bring a Karban Mincha as well. The Mincha is what a person could do, but we learned before that, generally speaking, a Mincha was brought by the least financially able, the least financially capable people, because a Mincha is the cheapest. So, a Mincha is the Karban that everybody can afford. It's the common man's Karban. That's the Karban Mincha. And that was brought when a person wanted to bring a Karban. They couldn't afford better. They brought a Karban Mincha.
Kohanim really had no income.
Okay, so one way to look at it is Kohanim don't have any income. So if you're going to require a Kohen to bring a Karban, it would be... it would impose upon him to make him bring a more expensive Karban. So that's one way to look at it, that Hashem was merciful on the Kohanim and had them only bring a Karban Mincha because it is the least expensive of all the Karbanos. Now the Kohen Gadol, we are going to learn later, and anybody who looked in Rashi in yesterday's parsha would have seen this already. We'll learn it, Mitzvah Hashem, when we get the parsha Zemar, that the Kohen Gadol had to be wealthy. If when he became Kohen Gadol he wasn't wealthy, it was required that the Kohanim make him wealthy. He had to be a wealthy man to be the Kohen Gadol. Even if he wasn't wealthy to begin with, he had to be made wealthy to be the Kohen Gadol. So the Kohen Gadol, to require him to bring a more expensive Karban daily, he could have afforded it. But then again, it is daily, every single day. Even a wealthy person, if you've got to spring for a bull every day, it's going to deplete somebody's income. That's pretty hard to keep up with. So a Karban Mincha is a loaf of bread or matzah every day. So that's what he had to do daily to maintain as a Kohen Gadol. Yeah.
Well, God sustains us every day. We don't just eat in the morning.
You're answering why it's morning and evening.
Right.
Okay, good, good. So good point. So you're saying that it's meant to acknowledge the fact that Hashem is taking care of us morning and afternoon,
right,
all day.
And God is not, He's not just for the rich people or the most talented people. He's for
everybody.
The Jew.
Okay.
He's for everybody.
Right.
So you pick something that's more ordinary. This seems like it's more labor intensive. It's ordinary ingredients that are labor intensive.
Okay, so you're pointing out also, which we didn't mention in the question, that there's a lot going on. The way this mincha is prepared is more labor intensive than the other minachos. First you boil it, then you fry it. There's a lot going on over here. It's not one process. Okay, can you want to say something?
Well, if it didn't say the meal offering, but an animal offering morning and day, how would he really split it in half?
Okay, you couldn't split it in half. Okay, okay, that's a good point also. You can't really split the animal Karban in half. Only a flour offering can be split and brought partially morning, partially afternoon. Yeah. There's no shechita, there's no slaughtering, so it can be done that way. That's true.
I think part of, like what Jennifer said, to me it seems like, how does it look? So he wouldn't want to be boastful by bringing something bigger. And
okay.
This, so it makes it that if someone can't afford more than that, it's okay because the Kohen Gadol does it too.
Okay, good. Oh, so you're saying it sets the standard. Instead of raising the bar.
That's how it seems.
Right. Instead of raising the bar, it keeps it, don't be embarrassed that you're bringing a Karban Mincha. Even the Kohen Gadol brings a Karban. Who else? You're in good company.
Yeah.
Right, okay, good.
I don't know. Maybe the Kohen Gadol bringing it is bringing it on behalf of the whole community,
okay,
not just himself.
Okay, that's logical. If the leader is always representing everybody else.
So,
And the answer
this
is
wasn't the only daily offering, right?
The normal daily offering, which is the Karban Tamid, which is a lamb in the morning and a lamb in the afternoon, but that was paid for by the tzibur. That was a communal Karban. This is an individual Karban.
So who offered those lambs morning and evening? Any Kohen who was on duty?
Yeah, the Kohanim, they had a lottery because everybody wanted to do it. They had a lottery for different parts of the job. So they didn't auction off. They lotteried it off every day, but it was, that was the first order of business of the Kohanim, was to bring the carbon tamid.
So was there any connection time wise between the lamb?
The Gemara speaks about when this is called the carbon chavitin. The carbon of the Kohen Gadol is called carbon chavitin. The Gemara speaks about where it goes in the process. Yes, it is part of the... There was a routine that was set up, and the Gemara speaks about exactly what came first, second, third, fourth, etc. And included in that list is the carbon chavitin, and that would get you through the first part of the morning before the Kohanim would then get involved in other carbonos. Other carbonos were then processed, and then you have the afternoon ritual, which includes the carbon tamid. It includes, again, the chavit, it includes lighting the menorah, it includes the ketores, which was also done morning and evening. Evening, when I say evening, I mean afternoon. So there were things that were several routines that were done morning and afternoon in the Beis HaMikdash standard every day. This was one of them, the Kohen Gadol's carbon.
So, for another time, maybe, not necessarily for now, could we match up those routines with our davening? Like what? It's not for now, you know.
That's a tough one.
Is that the idea, you know, to make chakras patterned after the...
It could be that there is some connection to it. When we finish all of this, I'm going to have to give you that routine straight from the Gemara, how it goes. It's about, I think it's 15 steps the Gemara has over there. And to go, including putting the logs on the fire, there's taking the Trumas Hadesh and taking the ashes off. We haven't learned all the details yet. That's why we're waiting until the end of this. But when we do all that, then I'll have to give you, and if I don't, you'll please remind me, the order of things. Again, it's there's set steps in the morning and set steps in the afternoon, and then everything else is processed in between those steps. People brought their own carbonos. That was done in the middle of the day, you know, late morning till early afternoon is when the everything else is processed.
So like opening and closing ceremonies.
Right. And it was a process.
Okay,
right.
Thanks.
Now, you can look at the Kohen Gadol's carbonos that he brings every day, and the regular Kohen, the Kohen Hedyot, bringing it on the day that he starts. You can look at it one of two ways. One way to look at it is that the Kohen Gadol does it every day. Now, you're a regular Kohen, and you're starting for the first time to work. So, in order for the regular Kohen to appreciate the job he's doing, then on that first day, he does the same thing as the Kohen Gadol. That he's mimicking the Kohen Gadol. That's one way to look at it. That when a person is inaugurated into the kahuna, again, it doesn't mean to become a Kohen, but it means to begin the service as a Kohen. The first day, the regular Kohen, the inauguration, the inaugural process requires him to behave like a Kohen Gadol, even though he's not a Kohen Gadol, on that first day. That's one way to look at it.
What age is
it? It's not Bar Mitzvah. Later on, we're going to see that a Kohen has to be initiated for 5 years before they begin service, which, if I remember correctly, it's 30 years old, but I don't want to jump the gun. We'll see later on what age it is. Now, because the Torah speaks about working from 30 to 50, but that's not talking about service in the Beis HaMikdash. That's talking about the Levim carrying the... Yeah. Okay, so we'll see about it later. Now, but another way to look at it is that the Kohen Gadol, who has to bring this carbon every day, has to see himself like a newbie every day. That's every day he's like a Kohen starting for the first time. So the Kohen Gadol shouldn't feel that, you know, this is his thing. It's every day, it's like a regular Kohen. And on a typical day of the Beis HaMikdash, only the Kohen Gadol would bring his carbon morning and afternoon. But there were days when there would be a new Kohen, and then he would also. So when that would happen, the Kohen Gadol would have to look at what he's doing and realize that it is a new, it's what you do when you're brand new. So the Kohen Gadol every day, in certain ways, has to see himself as brand new. Mm-hmm. So that's another way to look at it. So the fact that the Kohen Gadol does it every day, and now all the other Kohanim only do it on the first day, has an effect both on the regular Kohen and on the Kohen Gadol. On the regular Kohen, it makes him realize the importance of what he's about to do, that you're like a Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol, for him, it serves to keep the Kohen Gadol in check and realize you're brand new also. That there's no entitlement over here, and you're brand new each day that you work. And there has to be a freshness and an excitement, just like that Kohen on the first day that he's working. Imagine how excited and how the anticipation that he has. This is his first day on the job. The Kohen Gadol has to feel that way every single day. Now, the mincha, as we mentioned, is the least expensive karban, and like was mentioned around the table, it represents the common man. It's what everybody else does. We know that the Torah says al halechem yichya ha'adam, man lives on bread. That's the most basic of foods. Now again, it's matzah, it's not bread, but it's the same idea. It's the most basic of foods, and the Kohen Gadol brings this karban every day, and it's split in half, morning and afternoon, and it is the most basic sustenance that Hashem gives to the whole world. And the Kohen Gadol offers that daily, morning and afternoon. So that it if you want to say that it atones for everybody so that they will get their daily bread, it represents the daily bread of everybody that you offer to Hashem. Hashem is giving you offer back, that kind of thing. But it is done morning and afternoon. It makes a lot of sense that it is a bread carbon, again a matzah carbon, but a flour carbon that is done that way. It is prepared in a complicated manner, both boiled and fried. Perhaps that's to represent different types of bread or flour prepared in different ways. The Kohanim, their karban mincha is completely burned. There is no kmitza, there's no handful taken off and burned. Now, the normal way it's done when everybody else brings a karban mincha is that the Kohen takes off the kmitza is burned, and the rest gets eaten by the Kohanim. So here, it doesn't seem so strange that if it is a Kohen who's bringing the karban, you have to bump it up a notch. So when I bring the karban, so the kmitza is burned, and now the rest of it gets eaten by the next higher person on the pecking order, which is the Kohen. But when the Kohen brings the karban, so the kmitza, if it would get taken off and burned, what's going to happen to the rest of it? There's no higher person on the pecking order. So instead, the entire thing gets burned. There's no kmitza removed, and the whole thing gets burned. Which is an accurate way to look at it, but the thing is, it still only applies to a karban mincha. A chatas, for example, a regular Yisrael brings a karban chatas. It is slaughtered. Certain parts are burned, and the blood, of course, is thrown on the mizbeach. And then the karban is eaten by the kohanim. A Kohen brings a karban chatas, same thing happens. That it's certain, the blood is thrown on the mizbeach, certain parts are burned, and the rest are eaten by the Kohanim. It's not, there's no differentiation between what the Kohanim do and what a non-Kohen does. It's only with the mincha that you have this differentiation. So the mincha, therefore, more than any other karban, represents the Kohanim. The mincha, more than any other karban, is unique to the Kohanim. It's brought differently by Kohanim than by a non-Kohanim. It has to go to a higher level, which means the whole thing is burned. And it's the karban that they bring when they start, and it's the karban that the highest Kohen, the one who represents all the Kohanim, the Kohen Gadol, that he brings every day. So the mincha, more than any other karban, represents or speaks of the Kohanim. It is the one that you associate with Kohanim more than anything else. It's a fascinating thing that it should be the cheapest of all the karbanos that is associated with the Kohanim more than any other. So I believe that the ideas that were mentioned are all correct. Number one, the point that the Karban Mincha is the Karban of the common man, and the Kohanim represent everybody, not just the wealthy. And in addition to that, the Karban Mincha represents food. On the most basic level, food is represented by the Karban Mincha. So, because it's bread, because it's flour. So that is the one that the Kohanim are associated with the most, because the Kohanim do the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. They do the service. They represent all of us in the service. We achieve atonement through them. And the most basic need that is provided by Hashem to every person is bread. That's the most basic need. We say in benching that Hashem is tamid lo chasar lanu ve'al yechsar lanu mazon li'olam ve'ed. Constantly, lo chasar lanu, he has not lacked for us. Ve'al yechsar lanu, he won't lack for us mazon, sustenance, li'olam ve'ed, forever. That's the most basic thing that we get daily from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's true, Hashem is also providing the air that we breathe, the atmosphere that we live in. I mean, there's plenty of things that, God forbid, could go wrong that are being provided for all the time. But where you see it the most, where you see the give and take, Hashem constantly giving to each and every one of us, is food. And it's not just us. It's every single creature on the planet needs some form of sustenance, which is provided by HaKadosh Baruch Hu constantly. And that process of constantly providing food or sustenance for those that Hashem created, that which Hashem created, that's the constant process of the reliance of human beings and really all of creation on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Karban Mincha, more than any other, represents that concept. So the Kohanim are identified with the Kohen Mincha more than any other Karban.
Well, I was thinking of two things. One, it knocks out ego, which is a good thing.
Yes.
And since no one's eating it, it's okay through Pesach.
Well, it's matzah anyway.
Oh.
It's matzah anyway.
So that's, can't get away from that stuff.
Right. Yes.
I don't know what came into my mind. I don't know if there's any connection or not. Originally, people weren't supposed to eat animals.
I mean, before the Mavel. Yeah, well, that's true. I don't know if ultimately that's right. I don't know if what ultimately is the goal, because we know, for instance, you know, the Karban Pesach is meat. It's hard to know exactly what. But you're right. In the beginning, it was not. There were no animals that were killed to be eaten. Yeah. That's true.
It says, on the top of the page, it says it's an eternal decree.
Yes.
So, I mean, we don't have the temple now, so we're not doing it now.
It's still a decree.
It's still a decree.
Yeah.
It's
a decree. Yeah, we're unfortunately unable to fulfill it.
Right.
But we are commanded to do it.
Right.
Even today.
This was happening in the Mishkan, in the desert.
Yeah.
Right? So, we know they had animals with them. Where did the...
Isn't that interesting? Where did they get the grain from?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And the oil.
Hashem provides.
That's a good question.
And they were doing that even though they were receiving the manna?
Yep. Yeah. See, the man really is the example of this as well. The man is what Hashem provided to the people daily, and that was your daily encounter with Hashem, was the man. The Hashem provided for you specifically every single day, and you saw it. It came down just for you. It had your name on it. Not literally, but it was for you. It fell specifically based on your deeds, whether you were worthy or whether you didn't behave so well. That was represented by the man. The man, more than anything else, was that constant relationship with Hashem. And it's food. Food is where you see it the most, even though we rely on Hashem for everything. But food is the thing that we need all the time, every day, and it's the thing that you have to think about. See, it's true we have to breathe also, but breathing is something which you can do without thinking about it, Baruch Hashem, right? The person can't, well, but in a healthy person, the breathing is done without thinking. So although we need it, it's not the thing. Hashem did not embed in us the need to think about it. But food, you got to think about. If you don't think about it, you don't have it. someone's got to be on top of the situation when it comes to food. You have a family, someone's got to be on top of it. If everybody ignores the need to eat, then everybody's going to be hungry. It's got to be their responsibility. It's got to be somebody's on top of the situation. So that is where you see the constant daily interaction with Hashem. There are other needs as well, but they're not every day. There are things that come up. You need new clothes. Okay, but that's not every day that you need new clothes. So it's not the kind of thing which would represent the need that we rely on Hashem every single day. But food is every day. Every single day and multiple times a day, you got to worry about food. So the Karban Mincha, more than anything else, represents that reliance on Hashem. And the Kohanim are identified by the Kohen Mincha more than anything else. When they bring a Karban Mincha, it's different than everybody else. And they do it when they begin their service, and the Kohen Gadol does it every single day. Okay. Now, the next paragraph, we'll do one more paragraph this evening. Because, as you'll see, once we do this paragraph, we're going to be in a whole bunch of other things we need to talk about. So, now we move on to more details about the Karban Chatas. As I mentioned to you, Parashas Tzav gives us more details about things that we didn't cover in Parashas Vayikra. So we talked already about the Ola, and there we talked about the ashes, and we talked about the fires, which we did not speak about in Parashas Vayikra. And then we spoke about the Mincha, and some points about the Mincha last week, and now this week that we didn't mention in Parashas Vayikra. Now, this paragraph is about the Karban Chatas and parts that we did not mention in Parashas Vayikra. Yes?
Is there like an encyclopedia of what to do in the Beit?
It's called the Gemara.
I know there are discussions in the Gemara, but did anybody organize?
It's fairly organized in the Mishnayos. The Mishnayos actually, it's interesting, the Mishnayos that have to do with the service in the Beis HaMikdash is actually, in my opinion, more organized, or at least more obviously organized than other Mishnayos. Interestingly, you would think that wouldn't be the case, but it is that way, that the Mishnayos are very, very linear in Kodshim that have to do with the Beis HaMikdash.
Thank you.
So, Pasuk Yudzayin, verse 17, Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lemar, Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Daber al Aaron ve'al banav Lemar, speak to Aaron and to his son, saying, Zos Torah Sachatos, this is the law of the chatas, of the sin offering. First of all, bimkoma shetishachet ha'olah tishachet ha'chatas lifnei Hashem, the same place where the ola gets slaughtered, which is on the north side of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan, that is where the chatas should be slaughtered. Kodesh kadashim hi, it is a Holy of Holies, meaning, not that it goes into the Holy of Holies, it means it is a higher level carbon. You remember we spoke about that there are two levels of carbonos. There's Kodshei Kodshim, that's the higher level, and then Kodshim Kalim, that's the lower level. Achatas is Kodshei Kodshim. It's of the higher level, which means that there's restrictions where it can be eaten and who can eat it. It can only be eaten in the courtyard of the Mishkan, and it can only be eaten by the male Kohanim who are fit to serve, which we're about to learn about. The Pasuk says, HaKohena mechate osa yochlena, the Kohen who is processing it, that word HaMechate means processing the Karban Chatas, he can eat it. Now it doesn't mean only he can eat it. It means a Kohen who is fit to process it can eat it. Only a Kohen who's fit to process it. B'makom kadosh te'achel, it can only be eaten in a holy place, b'chatzar ohel moed, in the courtyard of the Mishkan. That's where it can be eaten. Kol asher yigabiv sara yikdash, anything that touches its flesh shall become sanctified. We learned this before with the Karban Ola, and we had an extensive discussion about absorption and kashrus, so that if some other kosher food absorbs any of the Karban Chatas, then it takes on the same rules as the Karban Chatas. You have to treat it the same way, which means it would now have to be eaten only by Kohanim, only in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Mishkan, and also can only be eaten for that day and the following evening. It'll have all the restrictions of the Chatas. But here's a new one. V'asher yizeh midama al habeged, if there shall be any of the blood of the Karban Chatas that gets onto clothing, Asher Yizaleh, that which is sprinkled on it, that which comes on it, Tichabes b'makom kadosh, must be washed, must be laundered in a holy place. You can't take the blood of the Karban Chatas into a non-holy place. You can't take it to a mundane place. You may not take the blood of the Karban Chatas out of the courtyard of the Mishkan, even after it gets onto clothing and is now a stain in the clothing. You can't take it out of the courtyard of the Mishkan. And therefore, the blood has to be washed off of the clothing in the Mishkan. That's where it must be washed. Now, we come back to this, to the blood in a minute. Further, Uchli cheres asher tivush al bo yishaver, an earthenware utensil that the chatas is cooked in must be broken, meaning you cannot kasher an earthenware utensil. So, what's the word? Not coinware. No, mugs are
ceramic.
Ceramic utensils cannot be kashered. This is derived from here, that you cannot kasher a ceramic utensil is derived from here. You have to break it. Vim bechlina choshes bushala. But if it was cooked in a copper, or any metal, but here it says copper, in a copper utensil, umorak vishutaf bamoyim. So then it needs to be, it says in the English, purged and rinsed in water. So we know that the way you kasher metal is by boiling it in water, putting it in boiling water. That's the standard procedure, and that's what one has to do if the Karban Chatas is cooked in a metal utensil. Kol zachar b'kohanim ochal osa, all males of the Kohanim can eat it. Kodesh kadashim hi, it is kodesh kadashim, which means the females cannot eat it, only the males. And look at this. V'chol chatas asher yuvah midama Elohel moed. Any chatas that its blood shall be brought into the sanctuary, where it was not supposed to be brought, it was supposed to be put on the outside mizbeach. And if instead it was brought into the sanctuary, lichaper bakodesh, to atone for the kodesh, for the Beis HaMikdash, lo seachel, that carbon may no longer be eaten, ba'esh tisaref, it must be burned in fire, you have to get rid of that carbon. A carbon chatas, what's supposed to happen is it gets slaughtered, the blood is caught, and put on the outside mizbeach. Then the parts of the animal, some of the fats and the limbs are burned on the mizbeach, and the meat is eaten by the kohanim. That's what's supposed to happen. But if the blood of the Karban Chatas is brought into the sanctuary, the whole Karban is now invalid. You have to burn the Karban, it's no good. Now there are certain Karbanos Chatas that are supposed to be brought into the inner sanctuary, into the sanctuary. We learned some of them before. Those would be the carbon of the Sanhedrin, remember when they ruled incorrectly, or the carbon of the Kohen Gadol when he ruled incorrectly. Then they would bring a chatas pnimis, a chatas that was brought inside. Also on Yom Kippur, there are certain carbonos that are brought inside. But a typical carbon chatas, you're not allowed to bring its blood into the sanctuary. So we see here a very calibrated set of rules. The blood of the Karban Chatas cannot be brought out of the courtyard. If it gets on the clothing has to have to be laundered in the courtyard. They can't be brought out and laundered elsewhere. They must be laundered there. And in addition, the blood cannot be brought into the sanctuary. If it is, the Karban is no good. So it's very specific. The blood of the Karban Chatas must remain within the parameters of the courtyard of the Mishkan. That's where it goes. That's where the blood is caught. That's where the blood is put on the altar. And if it gets on clothing, that's where it's laundered. That's it. So it's very, very, very specific. Yeah.
If someone brings this offering and it becomes invalid and has to be burned, do they have to bring another
one?
Yes,
they do. They got to bring another one.
Even though it wasn't their fault? Because it's the Kohen's fault for taking it in?
Right. So the question is the Kohen liable? But the one who brought it has to bring another one. Yeah.
So if that happens, he's got to bring another one. The blood goes into the sanctuary.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it has to happen.
But if any part of it goes outside the courtyard, that doesn't invalidate.
No, that doesn't invalidate it. We're assuming that there's still some blood inside that was put on the Mizbeach. That doesn't invalidate the carbon. That is a difference over here, that the blood that goes inside invalidates the carbon, the blood that goes outside does not invalidate the carbon.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Nevertheless, it is still, you see, very specific. Yeah.
So if the ceramic has to be broken each time, do they actually use ceramic or they used
okay, that's interesting.
The
so
metal?
So there is a discussion about using ceramic, and that it appears that there was a great deal of turnover of utensils in the Beis HaMikdash for this reason. Now, a lot of the utensils were metal. A lot of them were metal. But there was ceramic that was used. Metal utensils were not necessarily plentiful. And therefore, if they used ceramic, they would have to break them because you couldn't kosher them.
That's funny. I always just assumed that when the animal, you know, got burned so they could eat it, that it was all done on the altar. I didn't realize that they cut it into pieces, I guess, and put it into
the
a
cooking,
utensil.
The cooking was not done on the altar.
Yeah.
The cooking was done separately on separate fires elsewhere. And it didn't have to be done. I mean, it could be roasted, but if it was cooked, if it was cooked, then it would have to be. It would have to be even roasted. You have the skewer.
When you say ceramic, are you including earthenware?
Yeah, I'm talking. I mean earthenware.
Earthenware.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
When we were at Shilo, we saw.
Yeah.
Pottery shards.
Shards.
All over the place.
Yeah. Right. Because if there any of the shards that were used for carbonos would have to be broken. Now, I'll digress into kashrus in a moment for these things because it's worthwhile. I mean, this is where it's derived, so we may as well understand what's going on over here. But the to be aware of the specific limitations of the blood of the karban chatas. The karban chatas is kodesh kadashim. It is sanctified, and it is a high level karban. But the high level karban still limits it not only from being diminished by bringing the blood out of where it's supposed to be, but it is also limited in bringing it to a more sanctified place. You see the Torah is saying over here that even something which may be of a higher level, it also has its limitations. And this is something which is anyway found in the Torah all over the place, that there are different categories. We find this across the board in the Torah. The different categories when it comes to Tuma and Tara. Different categories when it comes to Kiddusha. We know that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to get the Torah, so for the Ten Commandments, for the Aseret HaDibros, remember that the Zekanim, the elders, were able to go this far. Nadav and Avihu were able to go this far. Aaron was able to go this far. And then Moshe went furthest. There are very specific guidelines, and the rest of the people couldn't go past the fence. There are very specific categories that Torah creates across the board. And the Chatas here certainly projects that perhaps more than any other karban. The very specific thing. It is sanctified. You can't bring the blood out of where it needs to be, but you also can't bring the blood further than it's supposed to go. And if you do, you invalidate the karban. You got to keep it where it's got to be. When it comes to different types of items and kosher, so the concept, as we mentioned last week, is absorption, which is called blia. Blia is absorption. And that when you apply heat to something, it has the ability to be absorbed into something else through heat. So that if the carbon chatas is heated up and it comes in contact with a utensil, that utensil will absorb elements of this carbon chatas. So that even if you clean the utensil afterwards, the utensil will still remain We would say if it was meat, we'd call it fleshik. And if it was milk, we'd call it milchik, or dairy. And here we're going to call it chata stick. I don't know what we're going to call it. Right? It becomes, now it has chatas absorbed inside of it. So a chatas, after it remains, after it's brought, if it's brought to the wrong place, or if it lasts, if it remains for more than past the evening, it becomes not kosher. You're not allowed to eat a chatas out of the place where it's supposed to be eaten. You're not allowed to eat a chatas post the time that you're allowed to eat it. And it's always not kosher for anybody who's not allowed to eat a carbon chatas, which I assume is everybody in this room. So it's not a kosher item. So again, like we said last week, not kosher in this context does not mean, it's not a negative connotation, but it's off limits to us. So if it gets into a utensil, then you can't use that utensil without making it kosher. So some things can be made kosher and some things cannot. So something of earth, made of earth, earthenware, ceramic, cannot be made kosher. Now the truth is that one can kosher an earthenware, ceramic utensil. It is possible to do so, but only if it is only machziro lekivshan, only if it's put back in the kiln. If it's put back in the kiln, it will then become kosher. But Chazal, our sages, made a decree that we are not allowed to do that. First of all, most of us wouldn't have access to a kiln. But we do have access to a self-clean oven, many people. So if my china bowl or plate becomes not kosher, maybe I can stick it in my self-clean oven, put it on, leave it there for a few hours, and then it'll be kosher. But what's going to happen to your ceramic bowl or plate if you put it in your self-clean oven and leave it there for a few hours? It will probably break. Right. You may get lucky and it won't, but it will probably break. Chazal were worried that if they would allow this dispensation of putting it back in the kiln, then people would say they were going to do that, and you'd put it in the oven, but then you get afraid it's going to break, and after 45 minutes, you take it out. And then you'll assume it's kosher already, but it isn't. So therefore, they did not allow a person to kosher their ceramic or earthenware utensils, unless it is the type of thing which is meant to be heated up to that level, which is meant to go back in a kiln. But other than that, they did not allow it. So therefore, for all intents and purposes, when it comes to china and those sorts of things, if they become non-kosher, there is no method of making them kosher. Now, there are exceptions to the rule which are applied when it will be a significant loss of money. There are many exceptions to rules in halacha when it will be an onerous loss of money. There's a lot of cases like that, which means that when it's not that the Torah changes when there's a loss of money, but when there's a very big loss of money, then we can rely on minority opinions when it will be a very big loss. So therefore, in situations where, let's say, a person is becoming religious and they have a whole set of china or things like that, and what do they need to throw it all out and get new ones? So under certain circumstances, and you have to speak to your LOR, your local Orthodox rabbi, about these situations, but should they come up, there are sometimes exceptions to the rule where one can kosher something, ceramic or earthenware, under certain circumstances, and also only it's not simply dunking in water. There's more to do, but there are some situations where one can do so. But as I said, that dispensation is rarely used, but it can be used when there's a significant loss of money. It also comes up where a person, let's say, somebody in the family unfortunately passes away and leaves a very large, beautiful set of dishes, but they weren't observant. So what happens to those dishes? Do you need to get rid of them, or can they be used? So again, you should always speak to your rabbi before you throw them out. But But typically, a person has a beautiful set of china, and they have one plate, and the plate was came in contact with something non-kosher in a way that makes it non-kosher. Then there's not much you can do about it. Generally speaking, the earthenware ceramic cannot be kosher, and here is where you see it.
Flower pot.
What's that?
Becomes a flower pot.
Okay. Now metal can be koshered. Metal is kosherable. And the most common way to do it is through using boiling water. There's two ways of using boiling water. One is that you actually boil the water in the utensil or drop the utensil into boiling water. That's the same thing. The point is that the utensil comes in contact with the boiling water as the water is boiling on the fire. The other way that it can be done is to pour boiling water on the item. Now, when you pour boiling water on an item, by definition, the water is not going to be as hot because you're taking it off the fire, number one. Number two, you're pouring it. Whenever you pour something, it loses some of its heat. So that is less effective when you pour boiling water, is less effective, and therefore it does not work in all situations. So it works in some situations, but not in others. Whereas putting the item into boiling water or boiling water in the item, that is a more effective koshering method. Even more effective than that is to apply very high heat directly to the item. That's where the blowtorch comes in, or the self-clean oven, which is also a similar idea. That's where that comes in. So those types of koshering would take care of almost every type of situation to be able to do that. That's not always practical to be done. And of course, we always look for the easiest method because it's always hard to do. It's frequently hard to do the more difficult methods. So if we can get away with the easier method, then that's what we recommend, if it's possible. It's not always possible to do that. The general rule of thumb is kibolo kach polto, which means the way that the offending matter got in, that's the way the offending matter can get out. That's the typical rule, the general rule. Therefore, when you're dealing with a countertop is never directly on the fire because your stove is over here and your countertop is over here. So it's never directly on the fire. So how does a countertop get offending matter in it? Something spills onto the countertop. So just as the way the offending matter got in was through a spill, then the way you get it out is through a spill or a pour. You pour boiling water. Because the way it got in is the way you get it out. But if you take a spoon and you stick a milchik spoon, a dairy spoon, and you mix your meat chalent with your spoon on the fire, while it's hot on the fire, then the way the spoon got the offending matter was on the fire. Therefore, the way you get it out would not be sufficient to pour the water on it, because that's a lower level of how you get things out. The way you'd have to get it out is by actually putting it in boiling water on the fire. The same way it got in, that's the way you get it out. So it follows the same method. The heating up to red hot, like blowtorch type thing, that's usually for items that the way that they got their they absorbed the offending matter was through direct contact when it was very hot without any liquid. That the item was, this usually happens with when you fry an item grilled or baked. When you do that, where the frying has liquid. But when you grill or bake something, so there's no liquid. It's the utensil is coming in contact with the item, and there's no liquid in between. And those situations are usually where you're required to use, where water isn't going to do the trick. And you're going to have to use the more difficult method, but more effective method, of extreme heat applied to the item. So again, each situation is different. One should speak to the rabbi to know, but whenever it comes up. But you get the idea that the way the offending matter gets in, that's the way you get it up. Kibolo, kach polto. Kibolo, the way it absorbs. Kach polto, that's the way it expels. Kibolo, kach polto. So if it absorbs through something spilled or poured, it expels it through being through poured, if it's through water, water, and then through direct heat, direct heat. That's the typical way it works. And with earthenware, with cheres, with ceramic, there, none of these methods work. It does not get all the offending matter out. Even when you apply all these things, there still is offending matter in there, and therefore it cannot be koshered, again, with the exception of returning it to the kiln, which is not generally an option. That, so all most of that is derived from here. There are other places in the Torah also where it's discussed, but here you see the concept brought up in the psukim. Okay, so we'll stop here. Min Hashem, we'll continue next week.
Thank you.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.